Welcome to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues, a weekly program discussing issues of concern to the family and those who hold traditional family values in Pennsylvania and our nation. Archives of these programs can be heard at www.afafpa.org. And now, your host, Diane Gramley, State Director of American Family Association of Pennsylvania.
Day one, and President Biden signs 17 executive orders, including blocking the cross-border permit for Keystone Pipeline that's between the U.S. and Canada, placing a temporary ban on fracking on federal property, and we'll see just how temporary that really is, and re-entering the Paris Climate Accord. He views all this not only as saving the planet, but helping the economy. The progressives' idea is that all fossil fuels are bad and their use must be eliminated. President Biden calls climate change an existential threat, but is it? My guest today is Dr. Calvin Beisner. He's with the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation. Thanks, Dr. Beisner, for being with us.
Well, thank you very much for having me on the show. Always enjoy it.
So is climate change an existential threat?
No, climate change is not even a significant threat. Climate change has happened all through Earth's history. There have been plenty of times that have been warmer than today. There have been plenty of times that have been colder than today. Nobody knows what is the optimum temperature for the Earth or mankind. We do know that colder periods tend to be worse for life on Earth, and warmer periods tend to be better for life on Earth. There is just no good empirical evidence for the idea that climate change is an existential threat. The only real basis for that is computer models of how the climate system works. And those computer models have been falsified because they cannot reconstruct past temperatures. They cannot retrodict past temperatures without ad hoc adjustments, without just intentionally plugging in parameters that are not known from empirical investigation. So instead, the best empirical evidence is that that we have warmed by probably about a degree to 1.2 or 3 degrees Celsius since the mid-19th century, and that this is overwhelmingly natural. Human emission of greenhouse gases like carbon dioxide as we burn fossil fuels for energy probably have contributed somewhat to the warming. Some good friends of mine who are climate scientists, like Dr. Roy Spencer, think that we might have contributed more than half of the warming since then.
But you're talking about
frankly, nobody knows.
Yeah, you're talking about a degree to a degree and a half in the rise in temperature.
Right, and frankly, that's all to the good. It lengthens the growing season by pushing earlier the last freeze in the springtime and pushing later the first freeze in the autumn. It's just a win-win for
Absolutely.
Life.
Absolutely. I would think farmers would appreciate a warmer climate than a colder climate because definitely seeds do not germinate very well in cool temperatures, for sure.
Right.
Now, this is all based on computer models, and you mean the cavemen didn't write down the daily temperature in their caves? They don't have anything to go on way back then?
No, they didn't. We have various ways of trying to get proxies of past temperature, and they're more or less reliable basically in terms of relative temperatures, but not in terms of absolute ones.
Right.
That is, we can say that it appears from the formation of stalagmites and stalactites in caves that such and such a period was warmer than so and so a period, but we can't pin specific temperatures on them very well at all.
So they're using their scientific methods, which may or may not be accurate, to come up with the idea that climate change, that man has so impacted climate change that everything has to be shut down, that man has to go back to, fossil fuels, that's bad, and renewable energies, that's good. Now, when we hear a lot about fossil fuels, what is considered a fossil fuel?
Well, fossil fuels are basically coal, oil, and natural gas, and they're more properly called hydrocarbon fuels. They're fuels that mix hydrogen and carbon, as well as other elements. But hydrogen and carbon are the primary ones in them, and some of them are of fossil origin from the deposition of vast amounts of vegetation in the past, but some probably also are of origin in the Earth's mantle. And The great benefit of fossil fuels is that, well, several different benefits. One, they're very, very high density, about anywhere from 900 to 1,200 times the density of wind and solar. And the big cost in converting energy as we find it in nature to energy as we are able to use it, say, from the electrical outlet in the wall or from the gas tank in the car, is making that switch from low density to extremely high density. And you start with a lower density fuel, and you have a higher cost of making that switch.
So
fossil fuels are less expensive than renewables. They also take up far less land in terms of the amount of land that you need to occupy in order to produce, say, the same 100 gigawatts of electricity or the same, you know, million miles worth of transport fuel. And that means that we can leave more land to nature for wildlife. Mm-hmm. We can leave more land to agriculture to feed the population. That's just also a win-win. And then finally, too, fossil fuels, when we burn them, put carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. And carbon dioxide is absolutely wonderful stuff. Everything in the world needs it to live.
Right.
Plants use it in photosynthesis, and the more of it they get, the faster they grow and the more fruit they produce. And the more of that happens, the more all the different animals that eat plants, including us, can live. And that makes food cheaper for the poor around the world, which should be a major concern.
It should be, yeah. Didn't President Obama classify, this just shows how much I don't know about this stuff. CO2 is carbon dioxide, right?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Didn't President Obama have that listed as a dangerous element or something?
No, it wasn't President Obama himself. It was the Federal Environmental Protection Agency during the Obama administration.
Okay.
And the EPA made that ruling. It's called the CO2 Endangerment Ruling in 2009 after the Supreme Court in 2007 made a ruling saying that it could do that if it were to find CO2 to endanger public health under the Clean Air Act. Now, the fascinating thing is that the Clean Air Act itself includes language that explicitly excluded CO2 from its coverage. Supreme Court had a rather creative way of getting past that, and there are good reasons to argue that the endangerment finding and that Supreme Court ruling, Massachusetts versus EPA back in 2007, should both be reversed.
Wow. You know, President Biden says the attitude of the American people towards a greater urgency to focus on climate change, that there's been a switch and that people are more concerned about focusing on climate change and that we need to do something about it. Do you think the American people have bought into this climate change thing? And if so, why do you think if there's been a change of attitude, why do you think that's happened?
Well, let's take the second part first, why there might have been such a change of attitude. And that's pretty clear. The mainstream media have bought into this. They have embraced the message out of the United Nations and its Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which, by the way, notice the name. It is an Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. Mm-hmm. It is driven by government policy from governments all over the world, not driven by science. It goes through the motions of science, but it's not really doing science.
Yeah.
Far better is another organization called the Non-Governmental International Panel on Climate Change. But at any rate, the media push this message, and there has been some increase in public concern about climate change in recent months. But what we find every time we poll people and ask them to rank various different concerns, you know, from very, very high priority to low priority, climate change tends to come down near the very bottom of people's lists. It doesn't begin to compare with their concerns about the economy, their concerns about education, about health care, particularly nowadays about COVID, mm-hmm. anything like that. And when you ask them, how much would you be willing to pay to reduce climate change? As soon as you get above about $10 to $20 per person, all the interest disappears.
Oh, really?
And so it's easy to say, are you concerned about this? Well, of course, you know.
Oh, wow.
But how much are you willing to pay to take care of it? That just disappears.
Yeah.
And that's particularly important when it comes to Biden's intent to put us back into the Paris Climate Agreement, because there are really only two numbers that people need to know about the Paris Climate Agreement. The first one is, how much would total implementation cost? How much would it cost for all the countries that have signed on to it to do the things they've said that they would do?
Mm-hmm.
And according to the organization that put the whole thing together, the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change, the answer to that is between $1 and $2 trillion per year to the global economy every year from 2030 to 2100. That's 70 years, and this is completely ignoring the costs between now and 2030, which would be several trillion dollars anyway, but go without that. So
yeah.
We've got 70 to $140 trillion as the cost of implementation. The second question is, and what difference would that make in global average temperature in the year 2100? Taking their own calculations as to how much temperature reduces in response to how much CO2 is prevented from being put into the atmosphere, the answer to that question is 0.17 degree Celsius or 0.3 degree Fahrenheit. So in other words, we're being asked to pay $70 to $140 trillion to reduce global average temperature in the year 2100 by 3/10 of a degree Fahrenheit. That's 23.3 to 46.6 trillion dollars per 10th of a degree Fahrenheit of temperature reduction. And we can't even measure that. We cannot know whether temperature has actually risen that much or fallen that much or anything else in the year 2100. It's within the bounds of, you know, error,
within
the margin of error.
So we're going to spend trillions and trillions of dollars to lower the global temperature by less than 1 degree. Less than a half.
By less than a half a degree Fahrenheit. Less than 2/10 of a degree Celsius.
This is
utterly absurd, and there's just no reason why taxpayers should put up for this.
What do you think's driving this all? I mean, you know, we have Joe Biden, President Biden, who, you know, shut down the building of the Keystone Pipeline, and that's going to put it's estimated a million people out of work.
Yeah.
I guess on both sides of the border there. And then the Paris Climate Accord, you know, stopping fracking and all across the board, what it's doing to save the planet is going to cost not only Americans jobs, but in the case of the
people
pipeline,
all over the world,
Canadians jobs, but other people, you know, Biden's just worried about, you know, President Biden is just, you know, it's the U.S., but the jobs that are going to be lost, already jobs have been lost since he announced the blocking of the pipeline.
Yeah. Scores of thousands of jobs will be lost in the very short term, and even more jobs will be lost in the longer term because we cannot replace the energy that pipeline brings at the same cost.
Right.
And what that means is that as energy prices rise, the consumption of energy will decline, and that means that there won't be as many jobs because you have to have energy to employ people.
That's true.
So that's part of it. You asked, you know, why are they doing this? Well, I'm not averse to saying some of it stems from genuine fears. I think a lot of people really are persuaded that climate change is this existential threat, and so they want to take care of it by doing this stuff. But I think there are other motivations that other people have. Much of this is an anti-capitalistic mentality.
Mm-hmm.
You had Otmar Edenhofer, a German economist who was a co-chairman of the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, who said back in, I think it was 2009, that this effort to bring about a new climate treaty should never be understood as having to do with the environment. It has everything to do instead, he said, with redistributing the world's wealth.
The wealth.
From wealthy Western industrialized countries to poorer countries, developing countries. Cristiana Figueres, the former chairman of or secretary general of the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change, calls this whole treaty negotiation process the best opportunity we've ever had to completely replace the global economic system. Well, the global economic system has been characterized primarily by free trade, by capitalism,
mm-hmm.
and she is a socialist, the daughter of a socialist president of Costa Rica. It's clear what she wants. And then there are some people, I think, who see this as a part of the Great Reset, the effort to diminish national sovereignty, to eventually eliminate national borders,
mm-hmm.
and bring on one world government. In fact, French Prime Minister said that the Kyoto Protocol under the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change, which came up in the 1990s, was the first step toward global governance.
Wow.
So all these things are motivations in this stuff.
Wow. None of them good. None of them for the good of humans.
No,
for sure.
No.
Now, you know, President Biden says that he wants 100% clean power by 2035.
Will not happen.
Pardon?
Will not happen.
I don't think so either.
Utterly, utterly impossible.
Yeah.
And utterly impossible.
What would America look like, do you think? I mean, I'm asking you to predict or to kind of guess here. What would America look like if we were able to attain that 100% clean power by 2035?
Well, the only way that we would be able to do it is if we reduced our total energy consumption to a tiny fraction of what it is today. And that's because it is impossible to build the number of wind turbines and the solar arrays and all of the infrastructure that would distribute the energy from those and so on. It is impossible to build all of those things in that short a period, and certainly at a cost that that Americans could pay. So it simply isn't going to happen. But if it were to happen, what we would look like is poor. We would be desperately poor.
Mm-hmm.
We would lack all of the convenient transportation that we have. Say goodbye to the easy use of the internet and cell phones and everything. They take vast amounts of energy for those things.
Mm-hmm.
It's simply not going to happen. It's a pie in the sky by and by wish.
Yeah. Did you say that, you know, those who support climate change and then they're asked the cost, did you say that if the cost gets above $10 or $20, they change their idea?
Yeah.
They don't like
that? Yeah. If you simply ask them, are you concerned about climate change and do you want government to do something? A pretty significant majority of Americans will say yes. But as soon as you ask them, would you be willing to do this if it cost you $10 a month? The percentage goes down a bit. $20 a month, it goes down a good deal more. By the time you get up to about $30 or $40 a month, it essentially disappears.
Wow.
And yet, we're being asked, for example, Biden's clean energy plan, which is basically a sort of a do-over of the Green New Deal, we're being asked to embrace a plan that would cost in the neighborhood of about $1.5 trillion to $2 trillion per year for the American economy. Now, you can divide that by the 330 million Americans, and then you're looking at not $10, $20, $30 per person per year. You're looking at a much higher number.
Oh, for sure. Wow. Let's pray that Americans wake up to what's happening and to how embracing all that President Biden has. I mean, these executive orders, I mean, they're signed. So what he's done there is going to happen. So hopefully as the price of gas at the gas station, you know, filling up your gas tank in your vehicle is going to cost $100, $150.
Already some polling has shown that, you know, buyer's remorse is already setting in. A majority of the American public is already saying that they do not like this bunch of executive orders that he has done. They're clearly not in the direction that the populace wants. And the explanation for that is pretty simple. He never made this clear during his campaign. In fact, he didn't really have a campaign. The mainstream media were his campaign.
Yes.
And it wasn't based on specific policies. But it's really important that the American people learn about this stuff, which is why we put so much information about this on our website, cornwallalliance.org. Cornwallalliance.org.
Yeah, you guys have some great articles. I encourage our listeners. One that was fascinating for me to read was how many fossil fuels have to be involved in creating these renewable energies.
Wind turbines and
the solar panels and all that stuff. I mean, that's a fascinating article.
Absolutely. I mean, you cannot have wind and solar energy without fossil fuels.
That's
because
for sure.
they're necessary to construct the turbines and solar arrays. They're also necessary as backup when the wind doesn't blow and the sun doesn't shine. So they're never going to replace.
Yeah, I think President Biden signed a executive order saying that the wind has to always blow and the sun has to always shine. Didn't he sign that?
Well, you might not put it past him. He didn't actually, but it wouldn't be surprising if he did.
Give us your website again.
Yeah, that's cornwallalliance.org. And if I may add, to the end of this month, which is just a couple more days, as our way of saying thanks when people make a donation of literally any size, we're glad to send them a new published study called The Red and the Green, China's Useful Idiots, that explains how the Chinese Communist Party is using climate alarmists and other environmentalists all over the West to get Western governments to adopt policies that are very favorable to China and its goal of world domination. So if people go to cornwallalliance.org, click on the donate button, fill out the donation form, and then in the comments field, just enter the red and the green or promo code 21-01. We'll be glad to send that to them free, and 100% of the gift will be tax deductible.
Okay, so make a donation and they get a free study called The Red and Green.
And the Green.
And the Green. Or they can put in promo code 21-1.
21-01.
01. That's what I had written. I can't read my own writing. Okay, thanks so much, Dr. Beissner. I really appreciate it. This is fascinating to me.
Thank you, Diane. God bless you.
Manipulate our Americans. Right. Now, you take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay,
you
bye-bye.
Too.
You have been listening to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues. If you would like to get involved in the efforts to defend traditional values in Pennsylvania, please contact the AFAFPA by writing to Post Office Box 1048, Franklin, Pennsylvania, 16323, or by visiting their website at www.afafpa.org.